You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Can't say I didn't warn you. I have been telling you people for years, on every platform available to me, that Christmas isn't sexy. I have campaigned against Santa-themed porn, condemned dick pics taken in front of Christmas trees, and called for the criminal prosecution of people who post photos of mistletoe dangling over their buttholes on the internet. Now, to be clear, I am a fan of sex. I am also a big fan of Christmas. But Christmas and sex do not mix. Christmas isn't sexy. Sexy isn't Christmas. Christmas has always been a libido killer for me. That is not the case for everyone, as all that Santa-themed porn and all those mistletoe dick pics circulating online prove. But if I can't convince you that Christmas isn't sexy, that Christmas and sex don't go together, maybe the hardworking scientists at Ludwig Maximilian University can. Christmas came early for me when the results of a new study out of Ludwig Maximilian University made headlines last week. As with GGG and monogamy, once again, the science has caught up with me, and new research shows I was right about this shit all along. Christmas not only isn't sexy, Christmas is downright dangerous, at least where PIB is concerned. In a new paper published in the British Journal of Urology International, doctors at Ludwig Maximilian University in Munich discovered that penile fractures skyrocket in the days immediately before and immediately after Christmas. A penile fracture, I'm going to quote from the story about the study in The Guardian, is a medical emergency in which the erection-producing regions of the penis snap, usually as a result of forceful bending during overenthusiastic sexual intercourse. And a serious penile fracture? That can lead to serious complications, including Peyronie's disease. The Guardian spoke with Dr. Nicholas Pergaides. With his team, Dr. Nick examined the medical records of 3,421 men who'd sustained penile fractures in Germany between 2005 and 2021. It is the first study of its kind to explore seasonal patterns for these types of injuries. If every day was like Christmas, Dr. Nick told The Guardian, 43% more penile fractures would have occurred in Germany from 2005 on. Risk of having sex, PIV, and I'm just going to assume also PIB around Christmas, was so pronounced that Dr. Nick and his colleagues titled their paper, Penile Fractures, The Price of a Merry Christmas. All right, maybe that's a price you're willing to pay. Maybe that's a risk you're willing to run. Not me. So, it is December 26th. If you are drunk today and horny, turns out December 26th, even more than December 25th, one of the biggest days for penile fractures, according to this study. So, maybe no reverse cowgirl today. Maybe no penetrative sex at all. If you absolutely, positively have to drain your sack now, or drain someone's sack for them now, if it cannot wait until the 28th, maybe a little mutual masturbation, maybe a little oral, maybe save the pounding and the challenging new positions for New Year's Eve, which, according to this study, is a low-risk date for penile fractures. Now, correlation isn't causation, and it may be that everyone foolish enough to try new sexual positions drunk over the holidays is already at the hospital with a bad case of snap dick by the time December 31st rolls around. But data are data, and the data show that December 31st is a better bet by far than December 26th. While The Guardian had Dr. Nick on the phone, they asked him about other risk factors for penile fractures. The top two, extramarital affairs, and when sex is performed in unusual locations. So, let's say you're railing a hot twink in a Senate hearing room. As it turns out, the video getting out wasn't the only risk you were running. Penile fracture, also a risk. Or let's say you're leading an anti-gay movement that demonizes queer people while at the same time having hot extramarital lesbian sex on the DL while your bigot potato of a husband films you Let's say you're Bridget Ziegler from Moms for Liberty. And let's say the police in Florida investigating your husband for rape charges have come into possession of a video of you having lesbian sex, information that leaked right before Christmas. Well, you're obviously not at risk of a penile fracture. You're Bridget Ziegler. You don't have a penis, but you are at risk of being exposed as a huge fucking hypocrite, which happened right before Christmas. And I gotta say, that was an even better early Christmas gift for me than Dr. Nick's study. All right, before we get to the show, we've got big news about Hump. We got so many great submissions this year for Hump 2024 that we have decided to host not one, but two Hump film festivals this year, one in the spring, one in the fall. We've got 50 great new Hump films to share with you. Hump 2024 Volume 1 premieres in Seattle on February 8th and then goes on to tour the country and Canada and Europe. Hump 2024 Volume 2 premieres in Seattle in the fall and then will tour to all the same cities and countries all over the world in the fall. You can check out the lineups for both Humps, Hump Volume 1, Hump Volume 2, 2024, right now at humpfilmfest.com, where you can also order early bird discounted tickets for Hump 2024 Volume 1. And I will be there in Seattle on February 8th, hosting the premiere. Please come join me. All right, coming up today on the Savage Lovecast, on the micro, tons of your Q, lots of my big A, and on the Magnum, which you can subscribe to at savage.love. Jen Hecht from Building Healthy Online Communities joins me. We talk about the important work her organization does behind the scenes with dating and hookup apps to help spread good sexual health practices and good sexual health information, and also the work that they do with users of dating and hookup apps to spread, well, just better manners. That's on the Magnum. And it may be December 26, which is a bad day to have sex, but it is a good day to become a subscriber to the Savage Lovecast. You can still give your loved ones, your friends or enemies, a Magnum subscription as a gift for half off. That's $20 for a full year of the Magnum Lovecast. That's the Lovecast with more calls, more guests, no ads, the Sex and Politics podcast, the extended play version of my column, Savage Love Struggle Session, Savage Love Live, and more. To give the gift of the Lovecast, go to savage.love and click gift. All right, let's get to today's show. This episode is sponsored by Hims, affordable access to ED treatment all online. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/savage. This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the best mattress for your individualized comfort. Right now, my listeners get 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows. Go to helixsleep.com/savage. Support for today's show, support we are very grateful for, comes from stamps.com. Use Savage for this special offer. Includes up to $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's stamps.com. Enter S-A-V-A-G-E.
Hey, Dan. I'm a feminine presenting male in an open marriage for almost 10 years. Recently, my husband and I moved to the Southeast. My husband, who has all the masculine traits, is hooking up with no problem. I, on the other hand, am having significant difficulty. He often hooks up while I'm at home, and I am almost never included because the hookup is not attracted to me. I'm not a jealous person. I am well-read and educated in polyamory. Lately, this lifestyle has me feeling jealousy and inadequacy. How do I explain this to my autistic husband in a way that will make him understand? How do I cope with the feeling of being excluded and the depression and anxiety and suicidal thoughts that follow? Or is this just something I've got to work through?
You've read the books. You understand polyamory. You're not a jealous person. And yet, there you are, feeling depressed, anxious, and suicidal. And I don't think it's the polyamory or the on principle of it, of your partner having sex with other people. I don't think that's what's making you so upset. I think it's the fact that your partner is an inconsiderate, selfish asshole. Autism notwithstanding, it's fine for someone to be autistic, but what he's doing, hooking up at your place with people who are not attracted to you is hurting your feelings. And it may not matter to you if he sleeps with other people. You may even like it if he sleeps with other people. But you don't want to be with someone who has such little regard for your feelings. He needs to make sure that the open relationship works in such a way that it doesn't cause you a lot of emotional pain. And marching men into your shared space, which should be a little sacred to you as a couple, even if you are in an open relationship, marching other men into that space who aren't interested in you, who reject you because perhaps you're more femme-presenting. And there are a lot of guys out there who are attracted to more femme-presenting gay guys, but your partner is picking guys who aren't, maybe unintentionally. It's just inconsiderate. It's just rude. And so all you got to say to your autistic partner is, we have a new rule, and you're going to put this in your profiles on the hookup apps. Can't host. That means if he's going to have sex with somebody else, he's got to go to theirs. He can't have them round to his, because his is yours. And you need to feel safe in your apartment, safe in your space, not safe from the fact that your partner is allowed to have sex with other people and sometimes does just that, but safe in the sense that your partner cares about how you feel and prioritizes your feelings, even if it may come at the expense every once in a while of him being able to climb up onto somebody's dick. So, can't host. He can't host. This keeps coming up. Usually this comes up more often in the context of an open opposite sex relationship, a newly polyamorous or open straight couple where she, even if it wasn't even her idea to open the relationship gets opened and she has got dick lined up, like planes lined up over Chicago waiting to land in O'Hare, and he can't find any pussy because it's a lot easier for straight women to find men who are perfectly fine with sleeping with married women or partnered women. And it's a lot harder for men to find women who are interested in doing the same, sleeping with somebody who's married or partnered, sleeping with a man who's married or partnered. But this can be an issue in a same-sex relationship too. Dick is plentiful. Dick is a little easier to come by than pussy for all sorts of reasons that we're not going to go into right now because it would take up the whole internet to explain. But there can be disparities. And it also can be the case where one partner in a gay open relationship is more extroverted, is less, toward the demi side, on the demisexual spectrum, and is happy to have brief and anonymous and instant hookups with whoever, and so gets more dick than the other partner who may want to get to know somebody just a little bit or a little bit better before sleeping with them. And then they sit there and they look at their body counts, and the person with the lower body count may have feelings about not getting as much ice cream as the other person is getting. And what do you do about that? Well, you can create zones of plausible deniability where it's just not being rubbed in your fucking face all the time. And so that is what you're going to have to do. And the ultimatum that you're going to have to issue to your partner is no more in the apartment. You get a lot more dick than I do. You're more masked than I am. People seem to be more into you. And we are all of us prone to some petty feelings of jealousy and insecurity and also competitiveness with our partners. And so this is just rubbing all sorts of perhaps small, petty, jealous nerves of mine, but it is nevertheless sandpapering those nerves. And so if this is going to work, if you want to be with me and have an open relationship and not have me all day long feeling depressed and anxious and suicidal, can't host goes in your profile. No more marching guys past me through the apartment to our bedroom who are not also interested in having sex with me too. At home, we play together.
Hi, Dan. I am an almost 30 lesbian living on the East Coast. I was listening to your most recent episode, number 893, and in there you were talking to somebody and you said the phrase, you're going to have to use your bullshit detectors while you're talking to this person. And I've heard you talk about bullshit detectors before, and it got me thinking about myself and my own bullshit detectors. And I realized that my bullshit detectors are really, really shitty. I can have a conversation with somebody, and they can say anything they want directly to my face, and I will believe them wholeheartedly. And as soon as I talk about that conversation with somebody else, someone else can point out to me what they said kind of sounds like bullshit, and then I'll kind of pick up on it. Or if there's someone else in the room when the conversation is happening, you know, they'll hear the bullshit as it's happening. But I will fall for it immediately. And that's burned me a lot of times, where I believe someone at face value, and it turns out they don't mean what they say they mean, and it completely fucks me over. And I'm just wondering, is there a way to improve someone's bullshit detectors if they're really not the most fine-tuned? Because I would really like to not get burned by people anymore, just because they have the audacity to bullshit directly to my face. But I just have this belief in my head that if someone's looking at me in my eyes and saying it to my face, then they must be telling me the truth. They must not be bullshitting me. How does someone improve a faulty bullshit detector?
Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, when it comes to watching porn, has what right-wingers call an accountability buddy. Somebody who has software on his phone that allows him to monitor Mike Johnson's internet browser history, and he does the same for his accountability buddy. As we all discovered when this came out in the news, because Mike Johnson blabbed about it into a microphone, Mike Johnson's porn accountability buddy is his 17-year-old son. Nothing creepy or fucked up about that. Everything creepy and fucked up about that. Anyway, that's what leapt to mind when I was listening to you and your question. You need not an accountability buddy, although that is what the expression that leapt to mind listening to your call. You need a bullshit detection buddy. You need friends who have better bullshit detectors than you are that you can rely on to bounce things off. When someone tells you something, you share that with somebody else and you see what they have to say about it. Now, it may not be the case that your bullshit detection buddy is going to be able to see through a lie instantly, just hearing the conversation recounted to them. But if people are telling you just impossible on their face tales of bullshit, spinning out absolute garbage, and you're swallowing it, and of course they look you in the eye and lie to your face. People who lie to you don't lie to your ass. Well, they look you in the ankles. They look you in the face and lie to your face. Really good liars, really good bullshitters, physically have a kind of skill set. So obviously you can't trust your bullshit detectors. They don't work. They never fully formed or came online. I'm sure you must have some friends that have attempted to point out to you the red flags or the bullshit when you've been telling them about someone that you just met or someone that you're dating. And it may be that because you were interested in somebody, you were giving them, as we often do, people were attracted to, people were interested in, giving them the benefit of the doubt. And you told your friend who was like, that sounds like bullshit. No, no, they're sweet and lovely. And they looked me right in the eye and said it right to my face. That friend who tried to warn you, that friend who pointed out the red flags, that friend who could smell the bullshit, that's your bullshit accountability partner. Tell them that they were right, you were wrong on this occasion, that occasion, and the next occasion, and you need their help. So when you're with somebody and they're telling you something and it seems incredible, and yet you're inclined to believe it because you'd like to fuck them, excuse yourself, go to the bathroom, quickly text or call your bullshit accountability buddy, tell them, ask them what they think, and get a ruling. And maybe that back and forth with that trusted friend or friends, you can create a group text, will help your bullshit detectors kick into gear finally. And if not, well then, you will have bullshit detectors. They just won't be yours. This episode is sponsored by Hims. 52% of men over 40 experience some form of ED between the ages of 40 and 70. It's always been a taboo topic, but Hims is changing that by providing affordable access to ED treatment all online. On this show, we talk about ED a lot. It comes up, and I know that getting your confidence back can be really difficult after a few bumps in the road. Millions of men deal with the hardships of ED, but with Hims, there's a simpler, affordable way to get treated for ED so you can get your groove back in the bedroom at a very reasonable cost. Hims provides access to clinically proven generic alternatives to Viagra and Cialis up to 95% cheaper, with options as low as $2 per dose. The process is simple and it's 100% online, so no uncomfortable visits to the doctor's office. You'll answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option for you. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free in discreet packaging. No insurance is needed. You pay one low price for your treatments, online visits, ongoing shipments, and provider messaging. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if ED is getting you down, it's time to change that. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/savage. That's hims.com/savage for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/savage. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Dan, I met my wife 10 years ago, and one of the very first things she asked me out of the fucking gate was, do you want children? And I had actually just come to the realization 2 months before we met that, no, I didn't want kids. I didn't want to share my genetics. And bingo bango, that was the right fucking answer. And like I said, I've been with my wife for 10 years. We've been married for 7. We've practiced safe family planning, birth control, all that shit. And I'd always talked about getting a vasectomy because, let's be honest, it's my fucking job too to make sure that she doesn't get pregnant. And getting a vasectomy was and is pretty damn effective. So we kicked the can around for a while. And then when they overturned Roe v. Wade, it was come the fuck on, like just fucking do it. It's not a lot, you know. So I got that done this summer. And I found even more medical problems that were unbeknownst to me. And it made the decision of getting a vasectomy so much better because I couldn't live with myself if I produced a kid with my genetics. And, you know, that was a mutual decision. And I had it done. I just got my results back. I've got a 0 load count of sperm. So I'm shooting blanks. But there's something in the back of my fucking monkey brain that is kind of bummed out. Like, it's a little bummed that if I ever did want kids, that it would have been a horrible choice. Is this common? Like, is it okay to have a little grieving period? Because it's kind of got me in the dumps. But then again, I'm so fucking happy.
Getting a vasectomy was absolutely the right thing for you to do. And you know that. You knew you didn't want kids, but there is a finality now to your inability to have kids because you've had a vasectomy, inability to have your own biological children because you've had a vasectomy, that just is landing a little different. You're allowed to grieve your fertility all of your life before you got this vasectomy. And it sounds like during the process of getting the vasectomy, you learned something about yourself genetically that made you not a great candidate to be anybody's biological father. But you lived most of your life with this knowledge that although you didn't want kids, you could, if you changed your mind, have them. Now you can't very easily. A vasectomy can be reversed, but it's a difficult and protracted process and it doesn't always work. You can't have kids. You have closed that door. And so you make a choice. And sometimes we make choices about jobs, careers, children, marriage, partners, and we're happy with the choice that we made, but we still sometimes think about the thing we didn't choose, the path we didn't take, and the life we could have lived had we made a different choice. And there's something about that alternate timeline where there could be different kinds of pleasures and joys that we are not going to in this lifetime, in the timeline that you're living, ever going to experience. And sometimes those things that we're never going to experience because we made different choices aren't things that most of the time we wanted anyway, but every once in a while we're like, I didn't have my own biological children. Every once in a while I'm like, would have been interesting to meet that kid, but I'm never going to meet that kid. And I'm allowed to be fine with that choice. I'm happy with that choice. I'm also allowed every once in a while to be a little bit sad about that choice. you're in the wake of just having made this choice with so much finality, that door slamming shut is stirring up some dormant feelings about what could have been, the kids you could have had if you wanted them, and you didn't, and now you can't. But that's a different feeling. Now I can't is a different feeling than I don't want to. And once you get used to that now you can't feeling, the awareness that you absolutely positively made the right choice for your balls, for yourself, for your partner is going to loom larger and put into perspective the grief you're feeling right now about what you can't do. It's winter. My God, is it ever winter? In these dark times, there are two pleasures I cherish above all others, fucking then sleeping. I like to do both passionately on my Helix mattress. The Helix Sleep lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux Collection, that's ours, the newly released Helix Elite Collection, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and even a mattress made just for kids. To find out which mattress is right for you, take the Helix Sleep Quiz to find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes, and your personalized mattress will be shipped straight to your door free of charge. And with their 100-night sleep trial, you can try out your new mattress, see how your body adjusts, and if you decide it's not the best fit for you, you are welcome to return that mattress for a full refund. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design that's a combo of individually wrapped steel coils in the base with premium foam layers on top. It is the perfect combination of comfort and support. And again, they offer a 100-night trial to try out your new Helix mattress and a 10 to 15 year warranty on your Helix mattress. Right now, Helix is also offering 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for my listeners. Just go to helixsleep.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. helixsleep.com/savage. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Hi, Dan. Cis woman here, married to a cis man. We also have two young kids. Just calling today about managing a health condition. So earlier this year, I was diagnosed with pre-diabetes, and it kind of came as a bit of a shock because I have a naturally slim body type. I'm only in my late 30s, so it was definitely not something I was expecting. But so my doctor gave me the option of either starting medication, which I would then have to continue for the rest of my life, or just trying to manage it by diet. So right now I'm managing it by a very strict low carbohydrate diet. So basically like no grains, no pasta, no rice, no flour, no bread, no sugars of any kind, no fruit except for a few berries here and there. So it's quite a restrictive diet, but honestly, I've been feeling really great and I've been managing my blood sugar really well. So it's been overall going really well. Occasionally I do slip up though and eat something like sugary or something that I'm not meant to eat, like pasta. And what typically will happen is that 2 hours later I'll have like a huge sugar crash, and it's almost as if I've been given a tranquilizer or something. I will just pass out, so like just be dead to the world, like passed out on the sofa or something like that for a couple hours. So this happened yesterday. I was making cookies with my daughter and I kind of like lost my will to resist, and I did snack on a little bit of the cookie dough while we were making it. And then predictably later that day after dinner, I was feeling really crappy and ended up just passing out on the sofa after dinner. And then my boyfriend got so angry. It caused like a huge blow up argument. He said it was the equivalent of, say, him having an alcohol addiction and just getting blackout drunk on like a random weeknight when we're supposed to be taking care of the kids. And then I got really defensive because I said, it's not fair. You shouldn't be so harsh on me. I'm trying my best. Like, I follow this really strict diet 95% of the time. And, you know, sometimes I slip up, I lose my willpower, but he shouldn't just be so harsh. But he's like super like pissed about it. And yeah, basically not giving me any slack at all. And he was just super upset. So yeah, I'm just curious to see, what is your take on this? Do you think that his analogy is valid, that it's equivalent to, you know, being an alcoholic and getting blackout drunk and passing out? Or you think that he should be giving me more slack since I'm trying my best to manage this health condition?
I am disinclined to give your boyfriend here the benefit of any doubt. What I think happened was you succumbed, understandably, naturally, to temptation. You snacked on some carbs, and then later that day, you had to crash on the sofa for a couple of hours to recover from the sugar rush or the sugar crash. And he was suddenly, because you were incapacitated, solely responsible for the child care and was pissed for that reason. And rather than examining the division of household labor, responsibilities, and how they may have fallen out along gender lines, he cranked bullshit up to 11 with an accusation that to me seems really unfair. You're not an alcoholic with a drinking problem. You didn't get blackout drunk. You are a person who recently was diagnosed as pre-diabetic, and that has had a massive impact on basically every single thing you can or cannot put into your mouth. And that adjustment is a difficult one, and he should be a bit more understanding about how hard this is for you and how every once in a while you are going to succumb to temptation. Now, maybe going forward, when you have succumbed to temptation, you could send up a fucking flare. You can say, oh, we made cookies. I had a bite. I might be out for a little bit. Might need to lay down on the couch after dinner and just crash. And then it won't surprise him when it happens. But it seems to me that you two need to build into your lives some time and space for you to succumb to the natural temptation to have an apple or a bite of the cookie dough that you're making with your daughter, and that he, as your loving partner and co-parent, who should be responsible for 50% of the childcare and who wasn't there doing any childcare while you were making that fucking cookie dough, could have picked up the fucking slack when you were on the fucking couch later that night as a result of that fucking cookie dough. So I don't think the comparison, you know, it's an accusation. A parent who gets blackout drunk is a terrible parent. A pre-diabetic parent who 98% of the time is avoiding all the foods that might trigger this kind of episode where you're just down for the count is a good parent and a human being and is failable and is doing the difficult work of transitioning away from basically all the foods you used to enjoy that used to be a part of your diet and then can't be anymore. That is not the same thing as guzzling a bottle of Jack Daniels and being blackout drunk while you're at home with the kids. So you sound a lot calmer about your boyfriend's reaction than I sound. I would have been, if I were you, really fucking pissed. And I would have demanded that he drop that analogy forever and ever and ever. And the compromise, again, that I would offer if I were in your shoes is when you slip up, and you have a potato chip, that you give him a little notice. You say, hey, I'm human, fallible, had a cookie, might need to lay down on the couch a little bit later. So pick out a fucking movie to watch with your goddamn daughter and be a dad. This episode is brought to you by Stamps.com. I know that it's really hard work to run a small business. Stamps.com gets it because for the last 25 years, they've been helping businesses like yours save time and money so you can focus on your business. Knowing Stamps.com has all your postage needs covered with premium discounts and great rates. With Stamps.com, all you need is a computer and a printer. They even send you a free scale, so you'll have everything you need to get started. If you need a package pickup, you can easily schedule it through your Stamps.com dashboard. And if you sell products online, Stamps.com seamlessly connects with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Stamps.com has huge carrier discounts of up to 84% off USPS and UPS rates. Plus, Stamps.com automatically tells you your cheapest and fastest shipping options. Get access to the USPS and UPS services you need right from your computer anytime, day or night. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code SAVAGE, S-A-V-A-G-E, for a special offer that includes a four-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and enter the code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan, I'm a 50-something-year-old divorcee I've been in a relationship now for a couple of years, but I've only been divorced for a year, was married to a woman for 25 years, have one biological and a couple of stepchildren. There are still some complicated issues around my family dynamics, especially because I came out to them as gay and with a, you know, with a new partner of a relationship with a guy that I've known for a couple of years now. So I'm just kind of curious what the conventional wisdom is around sending out Christmas cards or holiday greetings cards. When is it okay for me as a still technically single, but in a new relationship person to send out cards on my own without being offensive to my ex? We have a very good relationship. She's very supportive. At any rate, how long should I wait? You know, we've been divorced a year. We've been separated a couple of years. I've been in this relationship now a couple of years. When is it okay for me to send one out for me? When is it okay eventually for us to send one out as a couple?
So how did your wife feel about her husband coming out as gay and divorcing her? That can be painful for a woman to realize that the man she married, although he may have loved her in some platonic sense, never loved her romantically or sexually. And while some women whose husbands come out as gay manage to have amicable divorces and friendships with their husbands, some carry around a lot of pain and sometimes shame, and they worry about how others will judge them or pity them because their marriage was a lie, essentially. I mean, I don't believe necessarily your marriage was a lie. I think companionate marriages are real marriages, and I'm not making any assignations here about how you felt about your wife at the time when you thought you were straight or didn't realize you were gay or trying to deny that you were gay. But how does she feel? I think if you want to preserve the relationship that you have with your wife, you need to prioritize her feelings here. And you should be able to send Christmas cards out as a single person or as a couple with your new boyfriend, whatever the fuck you want. You're a free fucking agent. You have every right to do whatever the fuck it is that you want to do with the Christmas cards that you want to send out. I'm not a etiquette expert. I've also never sent a Christmas card once in my entire fucking life. And it's a little late. We're answering this question, I think, after Christmas. So a little late for this year. But for next year, go to your fucking wife and say, this is going to sound weird, but I was tripping over this because your feelings matter to me. And our relationship still is very important to me. And I was just wondering if this would give you any sort of feels, me sending out a Christmas card with my new boyfriend on it together as a couple. Because if it would give you any sort of feels, if you're not ready for that, I won't do it. I think you should offer her that. I won't do it if that upsets you, or it might upset you, and then see what she has to say. You could, of course, disregard how she might feel about that. But you said that your relationship with your wife, a good and amicable friendship post-divorce, you have a child together, stepchildren you helped raise, that relationship is really important to you. And this is a way I think you can signal to your ex-wife that relationship, your relationship with her, is still a priority for you. And your relationship with her matters so much more than fucking Christmas cards ever could.
Hi, Dan. I have a question whether I should have continued to pay for the Magnum subscription to the Savage Lovecast for my ex-girlfriend. When she and I broke up a couple of years ago, she wanted no contact with me. She didn't want to be friends anymore. We even shared some online polyamory spaces on social media. And a couple of times I commented on public posts she made, and she ended up blocking me on everything. So she obviously didn't want to have anything to do with me. But she continued to use my Netflix, and I had created her own little user account on my Netflix account. And so I could tell she was doing that. After a few months, though, I realized I could not only see that she was using it, but if I wanted to, I could see every single show she was watching and the time and date she was watching it too, which gave me this weird window into her life that made me feel really creepy, like I was invading her space. So once I realized that that was a possibility for me, I went ahead and changed my password and deleted her user profile so she couldn't use my Netflix anymore. I didn't mind supporting her and doing that for her. She's a single mom. I care about her. it really wasn't that big of a deal for me to let her continue using that. But I also purchased her a subscription to your podcast. She is a mega fan of your podcast, had listened to every single episode you possibly could of the free version of your podcast. And so I was delighted that I could purchase her the Magnum subscription. After the Netflix thing, when it came time to resubscribe and pay for another year for her, I felt weird. I felt like if I'm purchasing this for her, then it's like, I know she's listening to this show. And it felt like I just didn't want to be invading her space, especially since she'd blocked me. And so I ended up deciding not to pay for her subscription anymore, the yearly subscription. So my question is, should I have continued to do that? Or do you think that it was a good call for me to stop paying for her subscription to your podcast?
Let's game this out. Your ex-girlfriend listens to every single episode of the Savage Lovecast. You're concerned that if you continue to pay for her subscription to the Savage Lovecast, to the Magnum, that you will be somehow invading her privacy. But you calling into the show that you know that she listens to religiously every single episode and telling us about the relationship and her not wanting no contact, but continuing to use your Netflix, which allowed you to have this glimpse into her, I guess, interior life because you knew that she watched Kimmy Schmidt again, binged it one weekend. I don't know what it is that you were gleaning from that that amounted to an invasion of privacy, but you were very particular about not wishing to invade her privacy. So you blocked her on Netflix eventually and you allowed her Savage Lovecast subscription to lapse. Yeah, I kind of don't believe you. You called into the show with this question that you knew that I wouldn't be able to resist answering because it would allow me to promote subscribing to the Savage Lovecast so that your girlfriend would hear your voice and know that you knew that she was watching Netflix on your account even after the relationship ended, even after she blocked you on other social media accounts and asked for no contact. You just wanted to worm your way back into her head and her consciousness for a moment. And I am complicit in this now by dint of having played your call. I feel bad about it. Not so bad about it that I didn't want to play your call so I could pimp my podcast. So here's what I'm going to do. Lady, ex-girlfriend out there listening to me right now, get in touch. Send me an email. Let me know it's you, and I will gift you, me personally, a subscription to the Magnum Savage Lovecast, and we will cut your ex-boyfriend out. All right, before we get to this week's listener response calls, I want to share a couple of comments about last week's show posted at savage.love. Says Mathis and Lee, Dan, I like your advice to the frustrated switch and her desire to be dominated instead of being the dom all the time. Beautiful sister, Dan is right. Barter. You get dominated first, and then they can roll over and beg forgiveness and submit to you. About that same call, Ted the Bellhop says, Dan acts like switches are a myth sometimes. I think there are more of us out there than he realizes. Hey, now, I have frequently observed right here on this program, and it's not an original observation on my part, that subs make the best doms. Subs also outnumber doms by a lot. So if subs weren't out there switching it up, kinky people wouldn't be getting laid nearly as much as they do. Now, some people are perfect 50-50s, equal part dom and sub, but most people fall somewhere in the middle. Also, it occurs to me, if subs weren't switching it up, no one would know they make the best doms. So, no, switches are not a myth. Basically, on any given weekend, in any given dungeon, there's a whole lot of switching going on. Infamous Julie really enjoyed the new Sex and Politics, featuring my conversation with Dr. Kelly Wienersmith and Zach Wienersmith, co-authors of the New York Times bestseller, A City on Mars. Says Julie, this may be your best Sex and Politics episode ever, Dan. Turns out, an equal parts smart and silly discussion of what would happen if humans tried to fuck in space is exactly what I needed to escape from the increasingly depressing situation here on Earth. Gay polycule puppy pile for the win. Thank you, Julie. Sex and Politics is our bonus podcast for Magnum subs, featuring extended conversations with interesting people. But we made this one available to all of our listeners. So if you're a micro listener and you missed it, check your feed for the last Sex and Politics. And if you enjoyed that convo with Kelly and Zach, we hope you'll consider becoming a Magnum subscriber so you never miss another episode of Sex and Politics. All right, for more listener comments and more of my responses, check out Struggle Session, a weekly bonus column for Magnum subs. Goes up every Thursday at savage.love. And now, listener response calls.
Hi, Dan. I'm just responding to the caller who phoned in about watching incesty porn, but like not actually for that, just for like the hotness of who's in it. And I must admit, I have noticed, as someone who's been using porn for quite a while, that a lot of the videos are just repackaged with the step blah 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 on it. So something that had previously been babysitter becomes stepfather, stepdaughter. Something that had been like a yoga teacher becomes a stepbrother, like ripping leggings. You know, you get the gist. Truthfully, I think there probably is some interest in it, but then the interest, I think, is just fueled by the market. Like, it makes total sense to me that these big free porn sites, rather than making new content, are just repurposing stuff they already have. And it kind of, this to me kind of smacks of like a moral panic.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling with some advice for the frustrated switch in episode 895. I also had this problem. I felt like I was putting in a lot of work to be a great dom and never finding partners who were willing to give me the same experiences. While your transactional advice can work for some relationships, I found asking subs to be dom to be more frustrating than it was worth. So for the caller, if you're into rope bondage, I recommend exploring self-tying and in particular self-suspension. I found this practice to be very fulfilling and giving me the kind of experience I was looking for on my own. Alternatively, rather than asking your subs to dom, ask your subs to gift you a visit to a pro dom who offers what you're looking for. And this can be a good learning experience that your subs can later enjoy. Always remember that you deserve to have great switch experiences. Don't give up and good luck.
Hi, Dan. I've been listening to your podcast for, I think, over a decade, actually, and I never thought that I would have any expert opinion on anything, but today I listened to your Sex and Politics episode that you released in the Savage Lovecast feed, and I was shocked that you spent so much time discussing zero-gravity sex, because I've had it twice, actually, and didn't think it was a big deal. I am a scuba instructor, and my ex-boyfriend was also a scuba instructor, and so I think technically that's not quite zero gravity, and obviously it depends on our buoyancy, but we both had very good buoyancy because we were instructors, and twice we had sex underwater. The first time we did it sort of along a wall, so we were not at the bottom, and we were both neutrally buoyant. We had to contend with tanks, which was a bit of an issue, so we could only do it facing each other, which was fine. Yeah, the problems that we encountered were not about the gravity or buoyancy, but more about lubrication and things like that. So it's not so difficult.
And we're going to leave it and leave 2023 there. Got a question for next week's Lovecast or something to say about something I said on this week's Lovecast? You can record your question or comment at savage.love/askdan right now while that question or comment is fresh in your mind. Or you can use the voice memo app on your phone and email your question to q@savage.love. Or you can give us a call on our landline and leave us a message at 206-302-2064. Tickets for Hump 2024 Volume 1 premiering in Seattle on February 8th, and I will be there. On sale now. Early bird discounted tickets on sale now at humpfilmfest.com. Go get them, and I will see you on February 8th at On the Boards for the big premiere of the new Hump Film Festival. Follow me on Instagram and Threads at Dan Savage. Follow me on Blue Sky at Dan Savage. And you can still find me on The Bad Place at Fake Dan Savage. To learn more about Jen Hecht's work, check out the website of Building Healthy Online Communities at bhocpartners.org. And you can find Building Healthy Online Communities on Instagram and Twitter at bhocpartners. And while you're digging around online, check out the Nice AF Project at niceaf.org. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Artunian, and me and Nancy and the tech-savvy at-risk youth, we will be back at you next week and next year with a new Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening, whether you're a micro listener or a Magnum subscriber. We so appreciate all you guys listening, downloading, sharing, and liking the show. It means so much to us. I hope everybody had a really great holiday season, and I hope everybody has a really wonderful new year. Thank you again.